Welcome to the Grappling Grappling Rewind Podcast.
Welcome to this week on the Grappling Rewind Podcast. On this week's show, we are going to recap the 2019 ADCC West Coast Trials. We are also going to recap Fight to Win 101 in Denver, Colorado. We are going to preview Copapodio Season 6, Fight to Win 102 in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and Brothers 8-Man Jiu-Jitsu. As always, I'm your host, Maine, here with my co-host,
Emil.
How you doing, Emil?
I'm so fucking pumped to cover ADCC West Coast Trials, man.
I'm super excited. It was an amazing event. There is so much stuff to talk about. I think I watched jiu-jitsu from when the event was supposed to start at like 1 p.m. until I think about 1:15 in the morning. And at no point, it was like only 2 points ever where I was like, I'm kind of bored. They had some intermissions in there. But four mats pretty much running continuously with showcase guys on every single mat pretty much at any point in time. All guys that are like, okay, he has a good chance of winning it. So super exciting. Before we do it into that, let's get into some news. Neil, you got any news?
I got no news, man.
Got no news. Keenan's going to put out his lapel guard anthology, I think, coming out in the next couple days. I think that's pretty much the only news that I have. My back's broken.
Damn, dude. Wait, what do you mean broken? Like, you're sitting here, you're walking around. Like,
so not Christopher Reeve's broken, but, like, my spine has a chip out of it.
God damn,
and they were like,
dude.
Yeah, your back's broken. And I went, ha ha, wait, what? So, the back.
What does that mean, man?
Like, it's probably, honestly, it doesn't mean anything. So I have a broken back, and I have degenerative disc disease for two discs in the back there.
God damn, dude.
So, and they were like, yeah, it's probably not actually what's causing the problem in your back and leg, though. It's probably something else. So, more x-rays, still trying to figure it out. I'm training right now.
Dude. Yeah,
and
of
it's,
course.
So it's not great. So, still doing that, but I lost the bet with Josh that my back is actually broken.
So that's a morbid ass bet.
It's a funny bet. I was like, come on. If anyone's going to have a broken back, it's my ass.
Yeah,
like, I'm the unluckiest dude ever. So.
Well, I hope they fix it, man.
I hope as well, because that would be great to not be in pain pretty constantly. So
I'm glad it's not hindering your ability to podcast, though.
No, so. It's not. Or watch the trials or fight to win. Dude, it was a good weekend for jiu-jitsu. Like,
Jesus Christ,
I was excited for you to come over and like start recording.
I know. I'm always excited to do the podcast, but like, I was especially excited this week to come and fucking talk about ADCC trials.
Yeah, like, so. I was like rewatching matches, like, okay, we're going to watch this, talk about this. And then I was looking at all the other matches that we're probably not going to get a chance to cover, and I'm like, God, this is a really good weekend for jiu-jitsu. Fight to Win had their first judo matches as well.
Yeah.
So
you want to get into it?
Yeah, let's get into the trials first.
Yes, absolutely.
Right. So let's start off with the 2019 ADCC West Coast Trials. This is the second trials for North America for the ADCC 2019 event, and it was fire.
It was unfucking believable. I can't pick a single match to say Rewind recommends, so I'm just going to say go back and at least watch the finals. The finals are fucking bonkers. They were absolutely nuts. Like, I'm flabbergasted at what happened here. Like,
we had submissions in every
six
single
out of seven,
final,
every
one
single,
final.
Yeah, exactly. Six out of seven finals had
that's,
submissions.
That's crazy.
That's unheard of.
And after a day of like high level competition, it was amazing. So let's talk about the beginning of the tournament. So there was some issues with it started like an hour and a half late.
Yeah.
It started at like 2:30 when it was supposed to start at 1.
Yeah, well, West Coast, you know.
Yeah.
They're a little bit more laid back over there. First off, it was commentated by Jeff Glover and Keenan Cornelius
for
a while.
The end,
yeah,
and right. I think Gary Tonin popped on and Sean. It was commentated by six or eight different people throughout the day, and it was really interesting. You heard people that could keep Jeff Glover
on
task for jiu-jitsu and people that couldn't, because there was one point somebody walked away from Jeff Glover and it was just him on the mic, and they're like, oh no, Flow Grappling doesn't want just me on the mic because I'm gonna say stuff that I'm not supposed to say. so it was great. It was interesting to see the first couple rounds, because it was pretty evident. Again, it was a huge event. I think the 66 or 77 kilogram bracket had 112 competitors in it.
Damn.
Which is an insane bracket. But it was interesting to see the first couple rounds, you had like regular tournament matches that you'd see at like a local tournament.
Right.
Like guys that really had no business competing on that level, like going and doing ADCC, which I think is really cool, because you get like, if you want to go and you want to win the ADCC trials, there's nothing that stops you from doing
it. Exactly. I love that there's a Cinderella kind of like like way of getting in there. And
yeah.
Josh Hinger actually had some really interesting posts on Instagram about like competing and finally getting and like psyching himself into actually doing it. I think this was his second time. I think he competed in 2017.
He got bronze in 2017.
Yeah. And so he was like, but yeah, that's dope. That's dope that you can just decide that you want to get onto that level. It's our version of the Olympics. You know, it happens every other year. But yeah, I don't want to belabor that too much. It's fucking awesome. Let's quickly talk about the rules and then let's get into it.
Yeah, let's talk about the rules.
So
ADCC has some funny rules.
Yeah, they basically split the match time into the first half is no points at all. It's submission only. And then they don't pause or anything. It's just at 5 minutes.
No, sorry, at 3 minutes.
Sorry, 3 minutes. Yeah. Yeah. And then I think in the finals it's
4 minutes.
4 minutes, yeah.
So at basically 3 minutes of the six-minute match for the regulation like bracket that's not a finals match, you go from no points to there are points all of a sudden. ADCC has different points as well.
Right. So, for example, taking the back is 3 points.
And they score the body triangle.
Right. They score the body triangle. Yes. Yeah.
And pulling guard is -1 point.
That's right. Yeah.
So it's a different point scoring, and if you're interested, honestly, you should go and find the rules and actually read through them, because it is really ADCC rules are their own thing, and all the guys that compete in that rule set talk about, yeah, it is a funny rule set. It is significantly different than almost any other rule set, and they will not restart you if you fall off the mat.
Yep. So we'll talk a little bit more about that, but let's fucking get into it, man. Let's talk about these results here.
So where do you want to start? What division do you want to start in? Because all the divisions were ludicrous. Some were a little more ludicrous than others, but place you want to start?
Let's read through the winners, and then we can go from there. So 66 kilograms, Nikki Ryan wins. That's over Keith Krikorian. 77 kilogram, John Combs submits William Tackett. 88 kilograms, Josh Hinger submits Stanley Rosa. 99 kilograms, Mason Fowler submits Diego Vazquez. 99 plus kilograms, Nick Rodriguez submits John Hansen. So those are all submissions, by the way. Every single one. Onto the women's.
So every single male final ended in a submission.
For the women's, 60 kilogram, Jenna Bishop outscores Nikki Sullivan for the only non-submission finals.
You said like it was a bad matchup.
Nope. It was outstanding. 60-plus kilograms.
The ladies.
Amanda Leva submits Maggie Grandotti. Yeah. Holy fucking shit, man. I'm speechless. Like, these matches were...
Dude, I was on my couch at like 1 a.m. watching these, trying not to like wake up the rest of the people in my house. I was like, holy shit.
Holy shit.
Got him.
Not just submissions, but like some of the most bonkers fucking submissions I've seen.
In like transitions and like the whole series.
Oh my God, dude.
So where do you want to start?
Let's start Nikki Ryan. Yeah,
okay,
Nikki Ryan submits Keith Krikorian by rear naked choke.
I don't recall the last time I've seen Keith submitted.
I
don't think he got submitted in 18. I think he has only two losses in 18 to Ethan Krellenstein in the trials for the East Coast trials. And then he took a loss at Nogi Worlds at the end of the year.
Both by points.
And I think he was like had like 84 victories. And he was 84-2 or something that year, or something crazy.
In the East Coast ADCC trials, he submitted his way into the finals.
Right.
Okay, that's fucking nuts. Into this finals, Nikki Ryan submitted his way throughout.
Nikki did have a bye in the first round, which I thought was interesting. We both thought it was kind of deserved, given he'd already been to ADCC as a, you know.
Given that he submitted his way and won the tournament, it's well fucking deserved. There's no question about it.
So let's talk about the sequence that Nikki's able to get Keith's back.
Oh, well, I mean, we can start from the beginning. There's a beautiful wrestling kind of leg trip takedown. Like, I was shocked at how aggressive Nikki was.
Yeah. Also, Krikorian had some really good snapdowns and like had a pretty tight like front headlock at one point that I was really impressed about, because I don't really think of Krikorian as like a top wrestler and obviously he can do it. If you can progress in ADCC, you can't just pull guard because you give up that negative point.
Right.
So you see the first couple minutes in ADCC, no one wants to pull guard because that at this level, especially towards the later ends of the tournament, like that -1 can really, you know, it can you a match. So all the top guys don't just sit and pull guard.
Right.
You know,
so
work for the takedowns.
Surprising single legs from Keith Krikorian. It's great to see him.
Yeah.
Like this side of him, you know, at this high level, really going for it. He does kind of like muff a single leg shot. And Nikki's able to sprawl, and he circles around and takes the back. And this is like, I thought that was really interesting because we've seen Keith Kerkorian be really adept at getting out of back control.
Who's a 10th Planet guy, and he's trained for years. I think we saw him at a purple belt at EBI. Like,
right.
He's trained for years in the EBI rule set, and escaping the back when someone starts on your back is a hallmark of his training. We've seen him repeatedly do, we call it an alligator roll. Basically, just a spin where you free the hips and free the shoulders.
Rolling really quickly, but here's the problem, and this is actually really interesting, is that in this case, they didn't, his getting his back taken was not the normal situation that they train for EBI rules, because he was turtled.
Right.
And that I think played against him a little bit, because now when he's turtled, Nicky takes the back, he doesn't have his normal defense to go to.
Right. And then Nicky gets like the body triangle and then goes in a way that we see the DDS guys do a lot, but also I remember specifically Lovato did this versus Tim Spriggs, the fight to win, one of their recent matches. He goes for the body triangle, but he goes leg in the middle.
Yes.
And so he controls the outside leg, but on the inward, what's the word I'm looking for? Under the knee.
Yeah, he has his instep under the far knee.
Yeah.
And, you know, this by the time Keith gets to the position where he's normally initiating alligator rolls, Nicky's already got really good control of the back.
I was super impressed here with Ryan's ability to fight the hands.
Yeah, so this was really interesting because he started off going really low with the hands. They were like kind of fighting at like the sternum level, and then twice what Nicky does is he snaps his arm out and then he shoots it up high kind of across the face.
Yep.
So he in order to avoid the grip fighting, he just does this quick snapping across the face, like almost like slamming the forearm like into the jaw.
But it's not like Yoshida style where he's going to like grind the face off. He just kind of, he's able to beat the hand fight and just get there first. So
right.
I thought this is a hallmark of things you see for high level guys.
Right.
And this is one of the, we've seen Nicky do high level stuff. We've seen him get good control, but usually when you see him have good control, it's because he's a step ahead of a guy.
Right.
This was a specific moment where we saw Nicky do something that was like, oh.
He took the shortest path to get his fist across, which is,
and he grabs the opposite shoulder.
That's right. So instead of going under the chin, which takes a while to like set that up, and your opponent has time to defend that, he says, fuck it. And he just teleports his hand across the face, and he gets that far, exactly, the far shoulder.
Yeah.
And now he's got like,
and even though Keith's kind of pulling against it, Nicky's, he sucks his shoulders up.
Yep.
And then he locks in the grip, and then he just slowly works his second hand behind the neck. And props to Keith, man. That dude took a choke
God.
A while, and you could tell he was fighting it for everything he had.
His face
and
crushed,
you
dude.
Saw Nicky just like basically go, oh, this is the finals, and just sell out the choke.
Oh, my God.
And
dude.
it was beautiful, and it was right over the face. It was I couldn't tell. It was definitely face, jaw. The nose was almost in there, so I'm not sure if it was a choke or if
smother.
It was like a smother.
Doesn't matter.
It was beautiful.
Yep.
It was absolutely beautiful technique,
yep.
And I was super impressed with Nicky Ryan's performance, especially against a guy who is
as
so familiar,
as Keith.
Especially
yeah.
So talented in that position.
Yep.
Like, dudes, we saw Ethan get on Keith's back, and we've seen Nicky get on Keith's back. And, like, other guys can get there, but Keith can shuck guys off the back. Like,
yeah.
That's what he is particularly – we've seen him all the way at Purple Belt and EBI get guys off his back. Like, he is really good at that. So to have Nicky have that level of control on a guy that's trained so specifically for that escape was really impressive.
It's just terrifying to see someone as young as Nicky
evolving
this much. Like, he's, you know, we
17.
17.
We
and
had two 17-year-olds in the ADCC
yep.
West Coast Trials Finals
yeah,
in some
it, right?
of the most stacked divisions.
Yep. It's terrifying to see that because – you know, now you're starting to see his wrestling game evolve, and that's just terrifying. That's scary as shit. Like,
yeah.
There's this young kid who's just, who knows what his potential is.
I think Josh talked about it a couple years back. So before I even started at Baltimore BJJ, they had Gary Tonin out for a seminar.
Yes.
Right before I started. You were there.
No, I wasn't.
Okay.
I had suggested it. And they scheduled it for Memorial Day weekend, and I have, like, every year I'm out for Memorial Day weekend.
That's funny. And so they talked about Gary Tonin talked about he had gotten a text from Gordon Ryan at the seminar, right after the seminar, that Nicky Ryan had broken an adult grappler's foot in an advanced division. I think Nikki was like 13 at the time or something like that, or like 14 or something, and he had broken some guy's foot in half at some tournament. And it's like, so that dude's been competing against adults for 4+ years.
Yeah.
And he's been winning, and it's just, I wonder where his ceiling is, because he has, he's a kind of a soft-spoken kid. I want to say kid because he's not technically 18. I wonder if he's going to stay in jiu-jitsu, or if he also has MMA interests like his brother does.
I don't know. I do think that, like, there's fewer examples of people, like, getting super advanced in especially, like, jiu-jitsu, and then transitioning successfully over into MMA.
The sport, it's becoming more sport jiu-jitsu-y.
And in general, I mean, just, like,
there's
MMA.
There's also money in it.
And also, like, MMA has evolved, right? Like, in MMA, if you want to be good at MMA, you start training MMA. Like,
right.
You don't train boxing and then this and then this like you used to.
You're not,
like,
a Muay Thai guy that comes over and learns some ground game. You know, sprawl and brawl is kind of gone now.
So, I mean, he's still super young. So
and he's super talented. So knows? I wouldn't put anything behind him, but.
Yeah. Anyway, outstanding match. Let's talk about the next 17-year-old finalist.
All right, let's do it.
So we have John Combs.
So
who's
the
not
division.
The seven?
Give me the division.
This is 1 second. This is the 77-kilogram division.
So this is one division up. So ADCC has every 11 kilograms, which makes it super easy to remember. 66, 76, 88. Wait, Jesus.
77.
66, 77, 88, below 99, above 99.
So
super easy weight classes. I love it.
So John Combs defeats the 17-year-old William Tackett.
By a super deep, almost one-handed guillotine.
Yeah, this was amazing. So this John Combs was definitely dominated this match. I mean, William Tackett had an impressive run.
We've seen Tackett on a bunch of stuff.
Yeah,
we've covered him numerous times on, was it On It or was it?
I can't remember which competition, but then there was another one where, like, his brother stepped in. Like, he's got an even younger brother who's like 15, who's also fucking dumb.
Who also
good.
Looked really good in this tournament as well.
Yeah. So, but that being said, John Combs was incredibly dominant. And at this point, it's Jeff Glover and Keenan Cornelius doing commentating.
Beautiful commentary.
Like, amazing. Like, just great. I mean, Jeff is great. He's weird. He's goofy. But, like, you know, Keenan can...
He's real weird.
He's weird.
He's real goofy.
He's also really knowledgeable and, like, you know, has
like,
gone
like
against,
low
like...
Key.
No, I mean, like, he has lots of stories about, like, going against all kinds of people. And Keenan is just fucking brilliant. He's a wizard. Keenan is talking about John here and talking about his overall aggression and how he just, like, how important that is. And you could see it. I mean, John is able to shoot a Darce and just suck the will to live out of William Tackett for, like, you know, 4 minutes or something like that. And then just doesn't let off the gas at all.
No.
Like he then switches to guillotine grip. And Keenan, numerous times during these finals, has, like, predicts what's going to happen in the future or talks about something that happens in the future. So in this case, he's talking about how John Combs's guillotine attacks are very similar to Josh Hinger's and how he's like...
And we saw that. I mean, we saw Hinger...
Well,
is it Hinger before this or after this?
After, and okay. Hinger... Actually, this happens in the Hinger match. But anyway, he's talking about how much of a pain in the ass this is to deal with when you are dealing with someone who's very proficient with this because they will not give up that headlock position. They will chin strap you. They'll put you in the guillotine.
They keep turning, and basically, no matter what position you're in, they're never going to give the position up unless you're able to get out of it. And because they're so... into this position, I love this position. Like I watch guys like Hinger and Combs like all the time because I play a lot of this same guillotine position. I was hearing Keenan talk about that. I was like, yeah, like I never want to let go of that position. It's really evident. And Combs and Hinger both have that skill to keep that through transitions on top, on bottom, and you see them also maintain top position with it.
Yes,
and they're able to do that. Like
the step over,
the bridge, basically the. What's the technique? You have
Sumageishi. Yeah, so you're talking about setting them over the head?
Yeah, and then you're able to land on top and mount.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's a thing you see. I love that. I've done it in
so
a couple
John
of
Combs
as well.
Doesn't do that, but Josh Hinger does. But
right.
So in what John Combs does is he does the really beautiful step over. Like, he keeps, you know, he chases William Tackett and then really dexterously is able to launch his leg over the far side to prevent any further escape to get the hips away to try to alleviate some of the pressure from from the neck. And so he has this arm in guillotine where he's just chasing William and just fucking like cranking away. And then finally, William goes for a low single. Like they're able to, he's able to scramble out, and William Tackett goes for a low single. And John, at this point, he's able to get that dumb deep guillotine grip. Yep. and
then you see him fight the hand, and eventually you see him grab over the shoulder, and you're like, oh man, that's gonna be tough. And when you get someone's in a deep guillotine, especially the camera angle they had, you can see how much the head is turned, and there's just no space to be able to pop the head out in the position. And I was super impressed with, again, all these guys in the finals fought to the bitter end on submissions.
Yep.
Because you've made it through that huge of a bracket, and like the weight of all of these finals matches really came through when you're watching them, because you got like, I had watched this for 12 hours today. Like, you've watched these guys go through guy after guy after guy, and like, and you've watched the matchups get tougher and tougher and tougher, and it's like these dudes have all had 4 to 6+ matches in the day. Yep. Against tough opponents who've only gotten tougher, and then they've met for this opportunity to win a bid to ADCC 2019.
Yeah.
And it had that level of like excitement in it for every single match in the finals, because you knew how hard these guys had worked just in that day to get to this point. So dudes were fighting hard to not get finished, which made it even more impressive at the end, because it's not like, oh, my neck's getting hurt. Guys will fight to the bitter end on it.
Yeah. But let's talk about the next match where Keenan's fucking wizardry comes through. This is Josh Hanger submitting Stanley Rosa by Anaconda.
I love to listen to the Atos guys commentate on other Atos guys.
Yeah, exactly. Because
they're always super, like, they admit their bias a little bit,
yeah.
But they always do pretty unbiased commentary. But they're always, you can tell they're, like, fans of the guys they train.
Oh, yeah,
like, 100%. They seem like they like their training partners. And yeah. It's really, we hear Hanger at ACBJJ, 12 or something like that, commentate on his training partner, and it was cool to like hear him be a fan of his training partner. I forget who it was. It might have been Keenan. I don't think it was Keenan though, but he commentated on a guy that he trains with, and it was cool to hear, like, they're just fans, like they like each other, they talk about what each other does well and what they don't do well, and it was really interesting.
Yeah.
In this match to hear Keenan talk about Hanger.
So this is a 1-minute submission. Josh is able to get Stanley Rosa in the Anaconda. So this is where, you know, Keenan was calling it. Like, he was like, you do not want to allow Josh Hanger to get a front headlock on you. He will guillotine you, or he will take the mount, one or the other.
Yeah.
There's, and like, there's no middle ground. And this exactly happens. Like, you know, they're kind of like collar tying a little bit. And Stanley at one point just kind of like leans forward a little bit too much, and Josh is able to get the snap down, and he gets the guillotine, and he sits down and he does the sumageishi roll.
Yeah.
Where he launches Stanley over him, and
he lands right in mount.
Yeah, but like not in mount, like they're both on their sides. So,
oh yeah, you're right. Sorry.
But he hangs on to that headlock, and he's got, like, you know, the chin strap, and then alternating between that and like the guillotine grip, and then he, right, like Keenan literally says, oh yeah, Josh is really great, he'll sit in and force you to defend the choke by rolling, and he does it. This happens a second time, and this time Josh is expecting it, and right during the roll he uses that to adjust the arm into the Anaconda and sink the choke. It was fucking beautiful.
Beautiful to hear Keenan talk about it, and then beautiful to see exactly what, like, Keenan has seen and obviously knows, and you watch Rosa just change the angle, and Hanger goes, cool, and like rolls with the angle with the arms to just make just a beautiful sub in like a minute and like 6 seconds or something.
Something like that, yeah. And also, Josh is 37 years old. They were like, Josh is doing this for all the over 30 competitors out
Dude,
there.
He,
like,
he just won the world championships in Nogi this year for IBJJF, and then he just won this. Like,
yep.
It's impressive. I like also, they Flow Grappling did some really great interviews with the finalists and Gordon Ryan and some other people. They're up on Flow, and they were talking to Josh Hanger, and they were I forgot, completely lost my train of thought there. I was going somewhere with this, and then I completely... The interviews are really good, and what the fuck was I going to talk about? Like, I completely forgot what I was going to say.
I have no idea. I love Josh Hanger, though, and he's, incredibly...
Oh, I got it again.
Yeah.
Sorry, before I forget.
Okay.
Basically, Hanger was really happy to actually win a trial spot as opposed to getting, like, a bid.
Right.
Like, getting, like... Basically, he goes... It seemed like he was like, look, I have enough connections. He did really on the low-key. Like, I have enough connections that if I really wanted to get an ACC, I can, like... asked to get in, and I'm accomplished enough where I'll probably get in. And Keenan also hinted about this on commentary, and it was interesting that, like, yeah, he's almost a little overqualified for this event, and it seemed like in the background that maybe that was a possibility, that they're both looking at, like, okay, Hinger might get a bid regardless, and Hinger was super happy to actually just get the spot and win the spot. And so it was interesting to hear him talk about that in the interview and to hear Keenan on commentary talk about that. Sorry, back to your point.
Yeah, no. And I mean, so fucking well deserved. You know, like, winning the trials is such an accomplishment in and of itself. Yeah. I know these guys have fire, you know, fires lit in them, and they want to win the ADCC, you know, championship overall, but, like, God damn, dude, these fucking trials are nuts. They're no joke, man.
I mean, everything. If you go on Flow Arena, which I highly recommend you go, honestly, get the trial, get it for a month. Like, pay the money to go watch. This event was cool enough, and there's enough cool stuff
Jesus
on there.
Jesus Christ.
Go back, go to Flow Arena, and you can look at every single bracket and every single match from every single bracket. I think it's a couple
for
that there's
example,
some issue with. So,
for example, in the round of 16, Josh Hinger goes up against Kyle Bame. Yeah, that's fucking crazy.
And then the round before that, he goes against Hernandez. And then the round before, it's like,
hold on, and scroll up, because, like,
he goes against Hunter Colvin.
I think
the
I just
round
saw
after that.
Roberto Jimenez.
Yep, Jimenez was in that bracket as well.
Yeah, he gets knocked out by Rosa.
Yep.
That's fucking bonkers, dude.
So you can just look at, like, he had a round of 32 where he had to compete in every single round. Like, it's cool to watch these guys, too, because you had the guys that we cover grappling every single week. So a lot of these guys in every single bracket we were pretty familiar with. And throughout the day, it was cool because, like, I'm watching specific guys that I think have a good chance to win. And so Hinger was a guy all day. I got to watch every single one of his matches through it. And you watched him go against Kyle Bame, watched him go against Hunter Colvin, watched him go against John Blank, who is the 185-pound combat jiu-jitsu champion, who's now actually in the combat jiu-jitsu fight night versus Barnett and Samoes, because he got
fucking
the bid
bonkers
when Gordon Ryan got injured. So
you're throughout the trials, you're still, like, even in the round of 16, the quarterfinals, the semifinals, you're still seeing fucking crazy matchups.
Yeah, and all of these quarterfinal matchups are guys that you've heard of against other guys that you've heard of. If you're into grappling, for the 66, 77, 88, like, every single one of these matchups in the quarters and the semis and the finals was a super fight matchup. And it was insane. So I don't have anything else on 88.
Let's go to 99, because this was fucking holy shit. This is Mason Fowler submitting Diego Vasquez by rear naked choke from omoplata position. What the fuck? What the fuck was that? That was like,
Amir, you're letting it fly this week.
I just, like, in general, like, you know, we don't see omoplata in Nogi
ever.
You know,
well, he didn't finish the omoplata. Well, I'll have it said.
That's probably because, you know, like, Vasquez wasn't tapping when his fucking ligaments were completely ripped out of his shoulder. Like, his arm was way behind
him.
It
was sideways.
It was in a position where, you know, Mason Fowler was able to get completely behind him.
Yeah, so Fowler gets, let's just talk about the finish here.
Okay, yeah.
Fowler gets the omoplata, and everyone who does Nogi knows that omoplata is almost an unfinishable submission in Nogi.
We can talk very quickly about the setup here.
Okay,
like,
talk about the setup first.
So Mason is in knee shield half guard, and Diego's, like, kind of, like, leaning into him to pressure pass, and there's that, like, push-pull moment where Diego kind of sinks in to pressure pass, and then Mason pushes him back with the knee, and Diego's head is low, and Mason's able to just pummel his leg out and over into the omoplata position. It was slick as hell. And at this point, this is another Keenan being a wizard, right? Because Mason has the omoplata position. He has the arm over the back. And Keenan says, yeah, if he connects his hands around his neck. And, like, Mason was listening to him. He adjusts his arms.
And they were talking about he was going for something called, like, a pin lock. Basically, if you go on the knuckles over the eye socket, it's like an old wrestling technique or something.
So it looked like,
I know this is an Imanari, by the way. The choke that he finishes, if you have someone behind and you're in either back crucifix position or in an omoplata position or something like that, and you lock your hands reversed like this and you go for the choke, I know that is an Imanari choke.
Okay. Well, either way, this was nuts. So he's in the omoplata position, and then he, instead of keeping his arm over the waist of Diego Vasquez, he just connects his arms in a gable grip across the face, like twister style. You know, the grip that you get to finish a twister?
Yeah.
It's exactly like that. And he did it right after Keenan was talking about it. And, like, Keenan was losing his mind. He was like, oh, shit. He's got his hand across the eyes.
Yeah, Keenan Glover were excited to watch that, and that came across in the commentary.
Oh, yeah. And then he starts just yanking, the shoulder back, and Diego's flailing around. I would be shocked if there wasn't any damage that happened as a result of that. But Diego,
some guys actually have flexibility in mail. I'm not one of those guys,
dude,
but some guys do.
I don't know.
It was
that
super
far
deep.
Behind the back. That looked really uncomfortable, but it didn't matter because Mason Fowler was able to get the fucking choke anyway.
Yeah, he gets that Imanari style choke and gets there. It was again another insane submission in the finals of the 99 kilogram division. And like, you look through this entire bracket, it's like, and the 99 kilogram division was maybe a little less stacked with names that you were as familiar with, but still, like, you have round of 18, round of 32, quarterfinals, semifinals. Like, all of these guys had to go through a bunch of other dudes to get to this point. And to get a submission in the finals is just crazy.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, want to move on to the plus 99 and the craziness that was this finals match?
Yes, this was, holy shit.
Nick Rodriguez is, and it said in commentary,
he's a blue belt.
In quotes there. Okay?
No, bullshit.
He's a D3, wrestler who looks like he should actually be in the plus 99 kilogram division, jacked. Everyone in ADCC, almost every match, there is a shirtless dude. Something about ADCC dudes take the shirt off.
Yeah, dude.
I love it, man. It's just, there's something about that just, you see dudes in, the long, past-the-knee shorts and shirtless going for, wrestling tie-ups. That's what ADCC looks like to me. And Nick Rodriguez is exactly the kind of guy that I want to see in an ADCC trials finals.
I can't wait to watch this dude.
So he's a blue belt that's been training for 9 months.
Eight.
Okay, we're splitting hairs. So that means he was in the semifinals of the trials for the East Coast trials when he'd been training for 6 months.
Jesus. So he submits John Hansen by rear naked choke, and this was fucking bonkers. So he starts off with an awesome arm drag to single leg to get the takedown, and John just is like, all right, I'm going to take seated guard. This is, early on in the match, there's no points.
So they're on the ground now, finally, but there's no points.
Yeah, and it's not like Nick has a dominant position. They're disengaged, and John Hansen is seated and, perfectly fine.
And
he didn't lose any points at all.
Yeah, you see Nick trying to pass, and then he pulls back.
He didn't pull back. So this was incredible. I'll quickly describe what happens. He launches into the greatest fucking cartwheel back take I've ever seen, and then rear naked chokes him. Now, I had to watch this over and over again, pause it, figure out how he actually got the cartwheel past.
It's a cartwheel back take.
How many times have we seen that fail, though? And I figured out
all the time.
This technique worked.
Okay,
so,
why'd it work?
So here's what happens. Imagine, so
Emil's just pulled out his chair, by the way. We're getting serious.
Well, okay, so he's standing. This is Nick Rodriguez is standing. John's seated on the ground, and they begin grip fighting. So Nick, with his left hand, gets wrist control, and John just lets him get it. He doesn't care. And then with their other hand, they're doing that weird,
interlocking fingers thing where it's nobody really wants to commit to a grip. No one's going to give a wrist grip. No one's going to put palm to palm. So they do the interlocking fingers grip. Like a staple grip almost.
Right. Okay, so then what happens is Nick yanks his arm out of the interlocking fingers grip.
Which is kind of how you break that grip. Right. It's nothing unstandard there.
He's keeping the wrist control with his left arm, and then he dives, and he goes head first. His head goes on the left side his head goes to the same side that he has the wrist control, and he goes basically vertical, and he plants his free right hand also on the left side behind. And so what he does is when he's launching over John's head, this is what makes it successful. He balances his sort of pec and sternum on the back of John Hansen's head. And so he basically folds John Hansen a little bit.
He can't turn.
He can't track him. And he just does this amazing athletic leap around. But really, it's almost like a breakdancing spin on with your sternum on top of your opponent's head. And you fold them just enough. You're not completely folding them in half, but they can't track you. And so he gets around to the back. and he has with his left hand released the wrist
forearm grip, yeah.
The wrist control, and he's kept that arm on the front side of John, and it's already in choking position.
Yeah.
So he basically lands behind him in a squatted, like, athletic stance with his arm already in the choking position. Yeah. It was like it was textbook. I've never seen a cartwheel pass like that. It was fucking incredible. So it
was crazy. And then he gets the back, and then he gets the choke in a minute and 50 seconds.
Yeah, it was.
And it was crazy to watch. And you watch, and this is the plus 99. So these guys are known for being. I don't know why they're known for, like, some people on the show think that, like, they're not, you know, as exciting, and they're usually slower matches, but Neil, you're wrong. You're wrong about this. This was a fire match. This was exciting
as
shit. It
was fucking outstanding, man.
But again, we saw two dudes that were athletic. Like, Nick Rodriguez is a guy that should legitimately be at plus 99. He's not a guy that just didn't decide to get in shape and doesn't want to cut the weight. Like, he's a dude that will probably have a hard time making it a 99 kilogram division. Like, he's a legit above 99 guy.
Right. And I mean,
and they can do just physically different. Like, Tex Johnson is another guy that, like, is a guy that's not making under a 99 unless he's, like, really going to cut. He's not a fat guy at heavyweight. He's, like, an in shape dude at heavyweight. And we're starting to see guys that are really dominant at heavyweight be those dudes that are like, okay, you're a legit, like, heavyweight. Like Gordon Ryan now.
Yeah.
Like, Gordon Ryan's not making under 99 anymore.
Well, the other thing is, like, you know, that's incredible is, like, his skill set is perfect for ADCC. Like,
heavy
athletic,
pressure wrestling,
athletic
young
wrestler,
athletic.
Like, just has enough jiu-jitsu. Like, who was it? Weidman, I think, went into ADCC
yep.
with, like, only, like, a few months of jiu-jitsu.
Yeah,
and
2009,
like,
2007. And he had to fight Galvao.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they called him Weidman the entire time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Go back and watch that matchup. Weidman goes for a Peruvian necktie at one point. And you're like, what the hell?
Yeah, no. And
exciting matchup.
He'd only been training for months, too. And
but
so,
he had that heavy pressure.
He's a wrestler, right?
He's a wrestler.
So, like, so that's
ADCC is a
right.
rule set that really, especially with the way the points are structured and the negative for the guard pull, is really structured around top pressure wrestlers and excitement.
Yeah. And the other thing, too, is that I love this mixed rule set, like, where half of it is submission only and half of it is points. Like, it really, it means that, like, you can't go in there with, like, a specific game in mind. Because there's going to be sections that are submission only,
right.
and those submission hunters are gonna have the opportunity to do really reckless shit
yeah.
and threaten you. And
well, you have half the match
right.
to get into the spot that you want to get into.
Right.
But I do like that it forces you to. I mean, unless you want to take the negative, it forces you to, like, play the takedown game and not be super passive. It, like, the guy, one of those guys, typically will engage and wants to get that takedown because they want to put you on a bottom position.
Yeah.
And it's just really, because if you're in a bottom position and they get past the legs, cool, like, they're in a better spot because it's super hard to sweep in no-gi.
Yeah, and so I don't know if this is the reason why Matthias Lutz said that ADCC rule set is his favorite when I talked to him after after his match. Yeah, SAGC 7. But I'm beginning to appreciate the fact that you have mixed rules in the same round that it makes it more difficult to have a specialization.
We've seen Third Coast does this. We've seen more and more organizations now doing this mixed points, no points rule set. And I like it. Like,
it might disrupt the gamesmanship
a little bit. I mean, ADCC's been doing this for a long ass time, but it's never really caught on for other super fight organizations. I'm not sure really why, because we have seen boring matches in ADCC. Like, everyone kind of forgets the matches that are just like push, 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 push. Like, but I don't,
my friend. I don't remember. I don't forget Orlando Sanchez.
And Tom DeBless.
Yeah.
Where he laid on Tom DeBless. And Tom DeBless looked at the camera and looked at his coaches, put his hands up, like, what do I do? He's laying on me. And Orlando Sanchez was like, I'm laying on you.
That's right.
But no, I like the rule set. I like the difference of it's submission only, but then it goes to points. So you get a clear, defined victor. Also, if there's no points, they go to that overtime where you go to a scoring overtime, which I like as well. So you get a de facto, and there's a couple matches that went into like up to 10 minutes because you have a 6-minute match and a 4-minute overtime. And we saw that a couple times, but nothing, I think, in any of the quarters or in the finals. I know nothing in the finals. Nothing did that.
Yeah, it was fucking awesome. I mean, just, so we can go on to the women's divisions now. So for the 60 kilogram, we have Jenna Bishop defeating Nikki Sullivan by score. So, and these points came off of, again, another fucking amazing arm drag to single leg.
Yeah. Takedown.
Yeah.
Like, you're getting takedown points. And, yep. like, you won ADCC trials on a takedown. This is a super fun match because, again, Keenan trains with Nikki Sullivan and so knows her game, talked about it. And he was super complimentary of her game and was really impressed with her. I think she just got her black belt. Like, real recent. I think we talked about it on the show within the last month. I could be incorrect, but I think she's a brand new black belt. And, you know, been a monster at Brown. Jenna Bishop, also a monster grappler. And so, yeah, fun matchup. It was definitely, I think, over the finals, the slower matchup. But I was super impressed with Nikki's flexibility here and her ability to re-guard. And, yep. like, a lot of really, really technical no-gi work.
Yeah.
And Jenna was so close to passing so many times. And Keenan's really, really good at explaining exactly what Nikki's doing because he trained with her. And so it was, again, cool to see a finals match where you have a competitor from the same team that knows the game talking about it. It was, right. So that's why I think
it's very detailed.
Even though this isn't a submission, I think this is why it also makes the rearm recommends list as part of all these finals.
Yeah,
because
watch, I mean, they're all fucking exciting.
It was a really, really good match. You saw two high-level women, like, put on a performance. And it was a good weekend for women. Fight to Win was also headlined by another female match, so
yeah,
it's great.
Well, we'll end with, holy shit, Amanda Levis submitting Maggie Grandotti by armbar.
And this is in the plus 60 kilogram division for the women.
This was so fucking dope. So basically, they're both standing, and Amanda lets Maggie get a collar tie. And
she
then
she keeps doing it.
Right.
And we've seen repeatedly, she keeps going, and she looks like she's like shucking it and looking for a Russian.
Well,
but she's never committing.
She doesn't shuck it. So she,
I'm talking about initially, like earlier in the match, you see this, she does this repeatedly, and I'm wondering, like, why does she keep giving Maggie like inside collar tie position, and then she kind of starts shucking for the Russian, but never really committing super hard on the Russian. And the Russian is basically when someone has a collar tie and you angle and pop their arm off, you basically will put both of your hands on the forearm and the bicep.
And you hold it to your chest.
And you're looking
yeah.
sideways at the person. But right. Amanda, and I'm like, okay, Maggie's really athletic, and I feel like she deals with Cyborg, who also does this, like, you're probably going to be really hard to get that on
her. So here's what happens. Amanda is letting Maggie collar tie her. And then she just kind of, she rests her arm on the bicep of the collar tie on the outside. Just resting it, like, you know, she could, as you say, shuck it, you know, if she wanted to be athletic. But she was just letting it hang there. And then she gets her own, with her free hand, she gets her own really hard collar tie and snaps Maggie's head down. And she, at this point, like, has a very strong monkey grip on that bicep of Maggie's arm, and she leans back, sits down, kicks her arm over into an armbar position where the arm that she had the bicep cupped was the one she was attacking.
It's like it's a pendulum armbar.
It was basically a pendulum. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and it's beautiful, and I love it because it doesn't, especially in no-gi, you don't have to make that jump for the jumping armbar, because the jumping armbar really only works effectively if someone has a cross-side collar tie.
Right.
That's really, like, it. If you're going to jump, that's kind of the grip you need them to have, or you've got to force, like, a really funny, kind of like this grip, but if you're going to do the pendulum armbar, it's way less risky, and if you pull them down like you're going to do a snapdown, you can throw your hips into place and basically have them fall over you, and that's
yep.
exactly what happens.
Yep.
I watched it a couple times, and it's beautiful.
It was such
Hits
a good
it, grabs
finish.
It, turns under, and
just sets just the legs perfectly.
Beautiful.
Oh, my God.
I'm a little upset that there's not an alternate camera angle, because you couldn't see any of the hand fight going on, and you see Maggie trying to escaping, but you can only see the back, and you can only see how deep the arm is. So that's my only kind of gripe, is I would have loved to see the other angle or a different angle of this to see what sort of hand fight was going on. But beautiful technique, and it's a really fitting way to end the 2019 ADCC North American Trials, West Coast Trials.
Absolutely.
It was awesome. Highly recommend you go back and watch. Again, go to Flow Arena. Pick the name. And again, this is where we kind of talk about, like, we, Emil and I and Josh and Matt and Ryan, cover a lot of grappling. We watch a lot of grappling. Go back and go to Flow Arena. Go find the bracket for this. And go and click on all the people that won and then all the people that were in the finals. And go watch their run-up and their lead-up to this. And you'll see them go through some really high-level competition. And then pick some guys you know and that you like, and go and watch them. It's a really quick way to go do match study on, like, what the current meta is for what wins these kind of events, and the techniques that people use, and you'll see the variety of techniques that people use in this sort of format. So a lot of fun. Go back and watch it. It was amazing. I very rarely am happy to spend 12 hours watching an event, but this one was worth it.
Hell yeah. Absolutely fucking amazing.
So one more recap, a fight to win 101 in Denver, Colorado. I almost couldn't figure out where it was. This event paid a total of $24,550 in salaries and commissions and was headlined by black belt Tracy Goodell defeating Vanessa Wexler via loop choke. That was fight of the night for the black belts. So we're going to start on this one.
Start from the top.
All right. So Tracy Goodell defeats Vanessa Wexler via loop choke. That was fight of the night for the black belts. Tracy Goodell becomes the Masters female bantamweight champion in the gi. And we saw her compete back-to-back weekends. We saw her in Hawaii, and we saw her here.
Yeah. She's been super active recently. Definitely, definitely outstanding competitor. Well-deserved.
Yeah, looks really good. It was interesting. I think we saw Vanessa Wexler get Tracy Goodell sets up, you know, a loop choke from the guard, from the closed guard on the bottom, and is able to get Vanessa Wexler with this. I think we also saw Vanessa Wexler get hit with either a loop choke or with a cross collar choke from the guard in Philly when you and I were there.
I can't remember.
Yeah, I think it was. So it's interesting that this seems to be something that Wexler keeps running into in Fight to Win. And it's interesting because it's a very, very specific technique from the guard.
Right.
And you don't see a lot of people go for it. And
well, I mean, like, if you keep your head forward a lot, you know, it's the same thing with guillotines. Like, there are times when you get into a bad habit and you will get guillotined a lot.
Right.
You know, loop choke is the same mechanism there. Yeah. Like, you know, you put your head forward a little bit too much. You're leaning forward a little bit too much without, you know, respecting that.
But Goodell locks it up. Like, again, there's not a whole lot from a technical perspective to talk about. It was just like grabs the grip, turns over, pushes the head down, goes like Japanese finish on it, gets
Boom.
The choke. Really great. Next match.
Mike Nichols defeats Ray Ron by decision.
Then
Valor Caballero defeats Sergio Castillo by electric chair.
And that was submission of the night for the black belts.
It was an amazing submission. It came on so slowly. It was interesting.
Oh, yeah. No, like, I watched it. I was like, I got it. Okay.
Yeah.
That was kind of my reaction watching. I was like, he's going. And the commentators knew he was going for it. Like, everyone knew he was going for it. It was just like, okay, he's going for it. Can you stop it?
Oh, yeah, no. I mean, the electric chair, like, it is sometimes, like, against people who are really proficient with it, it's very fucking difficult. It's very destabilizing. Like, you end up having to post a lot, and, you know, the moment that you post with an arm, they're getting under you, and you are fucked.
Yes.
You are absolutely fucked. And unless you are, you know, one of those, like, ridiculously, like, flexible people, you're gonna fucking tap.
And most people aren't that guy,
right?
Like, it's just there's a different level of flexibility to be able to deal with that choke in that that leg position in that way, and I can't do it.
The last person that I could see that, like, didn't submit to it, that I, you know, the major event was there's the Eddie Bravo rematch with
Hoyler.
Yeah, like,
yeah,
he gets him into a deep fucking electric
chair.
And
Hoyler's looking at him like,
Hoyler,
like,
is
I'll
that.
I'll die.
He's like, I'm
and,
that flexible.
Yeah, and
like,
the commentators from Metamorphs were talking about, like, he does this, like, every day before class. Like, he just warms up with one of these, like, positions. And it's like, Jesus. And you saw, like, Hoyler just like, and it looked like it wasn't comfortable, but Hoyler was just looking at it
fine.
Like, nah, I'll be fine.
Meanwhile, I would have been screaming, but.
Oh, yeah, no. You know. So that was deservedly submission of the night for the black belts.
Then
Moving
we have
on.
Brian Sparrow defeating Philip Fitzpatrick by decision. Evan Barrett defeats Justin Downing by decision. Seth Daniels defeats Kuhio Tabankura by Kimura.
That was good.
That was a fucking awesome setup.
So Seth walked out with there's a backstage. So I love Fight to Win does this. They, on their Instagram, they post a bunch of, like, interviews and backstage footage. And Seth had a little interview after the fact. They talked about it. I like that they do the behind the scenes stuff with the competitors. And Seth talked about he doesn't pass the half guard because he can't, or something like that. It was something great. I don't believe in passing guard.
It was hilarious because that actually happens, right? So Seth hits an awesome fucking outside leg trip, like,
because he's doing Fight to Win judo coming up.
Yeah,
and he is. I don't think he's had a judo match in 12 years, is what he said. But he's prepping. Like, he was on the U.S. national team, I think. He was out at the Olympic Training Center in Denver, Colorado, for years. And,
so,
like, he's a high level judoka. Like,
you could tell. Like, the way he goes for the trip is, it's not like a scooping one. It's one of those, like, you with the bottom of your foot, you hit. He hit him pretty high, like.
And he apologized for it. It's a leg kick.
Yeah, it's a leg basically. Kick. But like, it wasn't.
I think he calls it the James Brown. Is what Seth calls the sweep. But you see him. He has a footage from Pans like 2009, 2007 as a purple belt, where he just like slams this guy with the most textbook version of the sweep ever. And this is a sweep that Seth's done for years and years and years and years. If you ever watch him in Fight to Win, he hits this sweep pretty much every time, unless somebody pulls on him.
Right. And you could tell how comfortable he was. So he's on top here, and he's kind of in top half guard, and he starts immediately attacking the Kimura, but then he like lets it go. He's like, ah, fuck it, and he gets into this sort of like Marcelo like reverse half guard, like top half guard.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
we're just laying across the body and he's got his back exposed, but he's still in the half guard, so you can't really take his back from there.
Right. And so he starts fiddling around with the feet. But it was just as a diversion. So,
yeah.
So Kuhio goes to defend his feet. He starts fishing his arms, and without even looking, like almost like behind his back, like Seth just grabs Kuhio's arm and yanks it forward. And now he swims his arm back into the Kimura position. And then he's exactly where he wants.
By the way, I
one
think
of the
this
four
is,
moves he does.
I think
right?
this is on Seth's DVD. Seth only knows four moves,
yeah.
And he has this foot sweep to this like Kimura. He's got some twister stuff, which sets up from pretty much the same position.
Yep.
And but like he knows four moves, and he's a black belt in those four moves, and it's a really impressive. And it's like it's I love watching Seth compete because you watch stuff that's like he shouldn't be doing that. Uh oh, worked. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, but you like. He was so practiced, you know, like,
dude,
he knew, okay, I just fuck with the feet enough, he's gonna react, and he was ready for it. He just grabs, he gets wrist control of the far arm, and then snakes his other arm around back for the Kimura position. It was fucking
dude,
perfect.
The
it was
day
amazing.
Or 2 days before this, Seth had, like, 12 cortisone shots in his neck, or
ugh,
something like that. And
damn,
then he has on the Instagram, Seth Daniels, Fight to Win Instagram, he has it of, like, you see him putting the needle into his neck. He lost a bunch of weight for this. Like, dude, I love watching Seth, because he, like, talks about the process on his personal Instagram, and, like, walks you through, like, what he did, and now he's preparing for judo, and, like, fun guy to watch. We love watching Seth, and he runs right to
him. I hope he stays
Troy
healthy,
announced
man.
Him out, which was funny. I always think it's funny. It's usually always Troy that announces him out, because Seth is a commentator for Fight to Win as well. And you always hear Troy like come on and announce Seth out. And he walked out with his kid, and it's like good to see him get a win at Black Belt.
Hell yeah.
Next match.
We got Philip Miller defeating Dielson Pimenta by split decision. Kevin Lewis defeating Mark Genko by decision. Angel Lopez defeats Jeremy Adler by decision. Philip Leitz defeats Justin Curtis by armbar.
And now into the black belt judo results.
This was fucking great. It was this is the opening judo event. Like
mm-hmm.
It was fucking
this
awesome.
This is the first time that Fight to Win has done a Fight to Win judo event. And if you don't know Fight to Win judo, Emil and I have been amped about it since it was announced, talking about it. This is the first event. You win this event. You win this matchup in the Fight to Win rule sets by either two ippons or by submission. And so an ippon, if you're not familiar with judo, basically an ippon is a throw that results in the opponent landing flat on the back, typically on the shoulders.
A clean throw.
A clean throw is basically, and there's like various levels of those, like waziri, and there's yoko. There's like a bunch of different style, like scoring points for throws, but the ippon is the winning throw in judo. So instead of just winning by ippon, Fight to Win judo, you have to do two of them. You can also do stuff like leg grabs. It's old school judo, like, so they're not going to ban shots and other stuff like that. It's like
you
it's
actually
what
saw
judo used to look like.
You actually saw a shot off the back. It was awesome to see. You know, it I think it was Ryan shooting for a single leg.
I think so, yeah.
And it was fucking great. I was like, this looks way different from other judo. And then
it also looks different than jiu-jitsu too.
Yeah, it does.
Like you saw like, oh, this doesn't. But I think both the guys were black belts in jiu-jitsu as well. But I know they were both highly decorated judokas.
You could tell it was different because they did not give up the grips once they got them.
No.
Not even, like, nothing. No readjustments.
Yeah, judokas will live and die with those grips. You ever trained with anyone who has a judo background? And, that, like, legit, like, not just, like, trained some judo, but, like, trained, like, judo heavy. They grab that collar grip. Good luck.
Yeah.
You need to, like, if they don't want to let go of that grip, good luck letting them let go of that grip.
Yeah, no.
We have a guy in our club that trains. It's a judoka kid.
Yeah.
And I always have him, like, being in class, like, all right, we're showing some throws. And I walk him through, like, what throws I want to show, because, like, his throw knowledge and his technique on his throws and his drills for the class are, like, way better than what I could show. So I'm like, I'm not even going to – he's a white belt in jiu-jitsu, but I'm like, I'm not even going to pretend, like, you know, oh, I have the knowledge. Like, you have better throws than I do. I want to learn the throws, so you're going to teach us the throws.
Hell yeah.
So this match, Ryan gets, and this is, again, I need to watch more judo. I've not, we started doing the show a couple
so
years ago.
So do the commentators. This is actually really interesting because now they're going to, if they want to make judo a major part of the event, they're going to need to get commentators who have better knowledge of judo. There's, so during this, there was an unclean throw, if you want to put
well,
it
no,
that
it was
way.
It was Ippon. I mean.
No, there was one earlier.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And one commentator goes, does that count as a clean judo throw? And the other one immediately is like, hell if I know.
Yeah.
It's like,
but I do like they were honest. Like,
no, they're honest.
I
get it.
Fight to one commentary.
I'm just saying,
is
like,
honest.
It's like, okay, you know, I hope this continues to grow. I love watching judo. I think it's great that it has a professional venue, and you know, hopefully, like, you know, get some people that can talk both. We have those now. You know, like they're starting to see more and more. High-level judoka, Olympic-level judoka.
I'm hoping
their black belts
they get Travis Stevens back, because they've had Travis Stevens before on Fight to Win in, like, jiu-jitsu matches, but I'm hoping that they get him for a judo
straight-up
match,
judo. Yeah.
Because that'd be great. So Ryan is basically able to get two Ippons in this match, and the reffing on this was a little odd. Again, this is the first time they've done a judo match.
So the final,
I was a little confused. Everyone was a little confused. The ref was a little confused. The competitors seemed to be a little confused.
So yeah, the final Ippon that Ryan scores is he's got Javier pushed into the very corner to the point where the ref actually has to push Javier a little bit to keep him in bounds.
Yeah, because they fall off the mat once during the matchup.
And actually, I think. Twice, or
I think they
both
fall off the mat once, and they're like kind of a little off another time, but they're off the mat completely one time.
So, and Ryan hits this throw while the ref is like holding Javier in bounds, so it just felt like a little
but he
weird.
But he finished the Ippon portion of the throw, the actual turnover to land him on the back.
Without
the ref being there, so I didn't really have a problem
with
it.
Yeah, exactly.
But it was definitely it's a new thing. Yeah. I definitely want to, after seeing it this time, I definitely want to see more of it.
Oh,
because, like, you see techniques you just don't see done in jiu-jitsu because guys aren't good enough to do it.
Not good enough to do it. You know, it's just that, you know, the points aren't worth it. Like, what is that much effort for 2 points? 2 points where you don't necessarily even land in a favorable position.
Right.
Like, it's dangerous. You know, if a throw was worth 8 points, you'd see a lot more people in jiu-jitsu
getting good at throws.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Getting good at double legs.
Yeah, exactly. You know.
Again, I really enjoyed it. It's cool. Like, I like watching judo. When we started the show, we're covering judo. And then it became very clear very quickly that we could not cover, because initially we started the show, we didn't have the event list. So this is kind of, again, this is not related to Fight to Win. This is just related to our show. We've initially started doing sambo, judo, jiu-jitsu, sumo, and... I think that's it. And then the first couple months, we realized, like, because we didn't have
so much shit going on.
We didn't have a huge list of all jiu-jitsu events. So we were trying to figure out, we were really covering the major jiu-jitsu events or the ones that we could find, because we didn't have, like, a list of, like, some of the smaller events that we cover on the show now that we enjoy. We just didn't know they were happening. They weren't broadcast well. They weren't advertised well.
And by the way, now we're starting to put that list on our website, grapplingrewind.com.
That was news.
Yep. And on top of that, we are also going to start putting it up on Reddit as well.
Yeah, so we're going to start maintaining the RBJJ event list on the sidebar there. It's also on our website. We're in the process of doing some upgrades to the website. I want to basically set it up eventually. When I say it on the podcast, I have to do it. Set it up eventually so that if you look at the website, it'll have a link to the event. It'll have a link to where it's streamed. It'll have some more information about the event. So you can go to thegrapplingrewind.com, and it'll be a one-stop shop for, hey, I want to watch jiu-jitsu this weekend. If I have access to Fight Pass and Flow Grappling, like, it'll link right to where you can watch whatever event is on that list, so that you can not have to search around. You can just go to the website, click on the events, and they're there. So we're in the process of doing that. So I forgot what we were talking about before. Oh, yeah, so when you started the show, we were trying to cover a bunch of different stuff, and then we very quickly realized that there is so much jiu-jitsu to cover on a weekly basis that we couldn't cover judo, we couldn't cover sambo, we couldn't cover, you know, as many of the other, like, stuff like belt throw, like, other sports that were not jiu-jitsu related. And also, I don't really have the knowledge of judo that I would like to have to really be able to talk about it on an informed level, as well as try to do all the jiu-jitsu stuff. So we kind of shifted away from that initially, but now that Fight to Win's bringing it back, it gives me an excuse to spend a little more time watching more judo. We also have the event list now. We have some other stuff in place to let us potentially do a little more coverage of judo, and Fight to Win gives us an excuse to do that, so I'm super excited about this. I love watching judo, and so it's fun.
Absolutely. Let's get on to the brown belts.
On to the brown belt results.
Alex Yablong defeats Eric Koh by decision.
This was fun. Because Alex Yablong, earlier in the match, earlier in the day, he was like the second match, I think, of the evening. He won a spot to compete against Eric Koh because Eric Koh's opponent had gotten injured like that morning.
Oh,
and
shit.
So the Eric Koh is initially, and Eric Koh's had the title belt before at Fight to Win. I actually trained with him when I was out in Colorado almost 2 years ago. And he's had the belt at welterweight before Fight to Win. And so Alex Yablong basically won a spot. Because he won his match to compete against Eric Koh for the vacant belt since the champion went to black belt.
And so he becomes?
He becomes the Fight to Win brown belt welterweight champion. So it's cool to see a guy like Yablong win that. And they also, it's funny, him and Koh actually train together like every Friday. So he goes, this Friday is no different. And they did an interview with him after, and it was really cool to hear like, yeah, I mean, we train together every Friday anyway, so this one's no different. And it was cool.
So, we have Ricky Furioso Johnson defeating Matt Sierra by decision. Walker Madden defeats Justin Coburn by heel hook. Casey Molina defeats James Mikas by decision.
And that was fight of the night for the brown belts.
Joshua Sauceda defeats David Wenig by decision. Jeremy Hastings defeats Shane Lemister by armbar.
And that was submission of the night for the brown belts.
Heather Woods defeats Sharika Long O'Neill by decision. Casey Pratt defeats Brett Hernandez by decision. Damar Ortiz defeats Jeremy Winia by decision. Alex Yablong defeats Jalen Reyes by decision.
On to the purple belt results.
Trevor Palmers defeats Dan Dykeman by split decision.
And he becomes the Fight to Win purple belt featherweight champion.
Clay Wilmer defeats Jared Ferrara by rear naked choke. Nick Gomez-Ramos defeats Samuel Castro by armbar. Brian Brescia defeats Carlos Garcia by decision. Jonathan Wilson defeats Kit Krupp by Darce.
That was fight of the night for the purple belts.
Christina Lebsek Ogden defeats Shannon Sin by decision. Rustin Hughes defeats Anthony Werner by heel hook.
And that was submission of the night for the purple belts. I want to talk about this matchup. So Rustin Hughes is one of the top para athletes for jiu-jitsu in the United States. He's basically, he's an amputee from the knee down on one of his legs. And I was fascinated. Again, Emil and I watch a ton of jiu-jitsu. I was fascinated to watch Rustin pass the guard here.
Yeah. So this was interesting. And, you know, so Rustin is trying to pass close guard for a lot of the match. Anthony Werner is trying to keep him in close guard. And Rustin, you know, because he only has, you know, basically his thigh, down to his thigh on one of his legs, he's able to, if he's backs up and creates enough space, just step that leg through into sort of like a, I would call it a knee cut, but like,
yeah,
it's more like just stepping into an outside ashigurami.
And then the other one he can also do is he can just like start to like leg drag.
Yep.
Without having to clear the leg. It's amazing. And I watched this a couple times, matchup a couple times just to see it, because he can just step through the guard with his leg because there's no leg entanglement there to have. There's nothing that gets in the way. He can just step out. And I was watching this going, I have no idea how I would deal with that. Because there's very few times that I watch jiu-jitsu and come across and look at a problem I've never seen. Like, it happens with guys like Keenan with like a lot of the intricate lapel stuff. But in Nogi, it's very rare I ever see something that I'm like, oh, I've never seen that before. That's really interesting. It's like, there's stuff like, oh, it's an interesting grip. It's a different grip. But nothing like, how would I deal with this guy trying to pass my guard? It was fascinating to watch. I highly recommend you go back and watch this because it's just great technique for passing, and it's something you never see
yeah.
because I don't know how you would ever be able to address this position. And so this is these are the matches that I like watching just before you see stuff you've never seen before. And it's outstandingly exciting.
Yeah, it's interesting to see how people who are amputees sort of adapt their own game. My first assistant instructor, the person who was my assistant instructor, was an amputee of the arm down, or from the elbow down on the arm. And he had a completely different game. You know, like his game was completely different. He, like, some moves he just did not want to bother trying to adapt, and some he adapted beautifully and like developed his own game.
And we've seen Fight to Win showcase para athletes before, with Keith Miner has, you know, again, an amputated arm, and they do. They have an amazing depth of different techniques and different ways. Like then some ones they've adapted, and other ones they just have decided not to adapt. And it's just fascinating to me. So he steps through to the outside Ashigarama, and he's starting to do what looks to be like a clover leaf. And eventually he passes the arm over. And Emil and I had a disagreement here. It's listed as heel hook in the results. I think it's actually a knee bar because Anthony kind of verbally taps like while they're doing some leg pummeling. And
yeah, it looked like he was getting sort of an inside heel hook position, and there was like a little bit of kind of like torque on the knee there.
Okay.
But it was lateral torque. It wasn't like it wasn't a straight on like knee bar torque. So it's like 6 1/2 dozen in the other, you know.
Yeah.
Like
yeah, Anthony had socks on this match too. I thought it was interesting.
Yeah,
but again, the whole
weird
match is really interesting. I highly go back and recommend watching this because you don't see legit really cool stuff like this in jiu-jitsu very often, so
yep,
it's a cool showcase matchup for para jiu-jitsu.
So we have Richard Vigil defeating Dan Becker by decision, Sean Spear defeating Andy Binall by decision, Kristen Reyes defeating Levi Rowe by rear naked choke, Eric Sains defeating Lawrence Beek by decision, Carlos Espinoza defeating Nicholas Bergel by head and arm choke, Shane Figliola defeating Eli Court by decision, Matt Paul defeating Tim Colvin by armbar, Edward Johnson defeating Jamil Coleman by heel hook.
And that does it for the results of Fight to Win 101. Anything else to talk about, Emil?
No.
All right, awesome. So moving to the preview section, where you're going to preview Copa Podio Season 6, the lightweight Grand Prix lineup. Rob, I don't have... So for Copa Podio, if you don't know, typically what they do for the Grand Prix events is they do a green group and a red and a yellow group, and then it's a round-robin format, much like Kasai does, much like King of Mats does.
So 2 4-man round-robins.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the top two people will or the top person will go on into the finals.
Yeah, for, against the other side of the bracket, basically.
Right.
So right now, I don't have a list of exactly who is on which side, so we're going to read through the athletes again. It's a lot of fun. It usually streams on their website, like Fightera TV, and I think it's like a $10 pay-per-view or something, but usually it's really interesting. This event has a lot of big-name guys on it, so really exciting.
So this is 77 kilograms or about 170 pounds. Athletes, we got Tommy Langacker, who's been a fucking monster. Absolutely entertaining. Definitely a huge person to watch.
And BJJ Heroes has a really great article on this, and that's actually where we got the athlete list, because they put out with all the information about all the athletes. So if you're looking to find some more information on it, there it is.
Yep. We have Jan Lucas. We have Luan Carvalho. Johnny Ludero. Levi Jones, who's also just been fucking on a tear recently.
We just saw him on...
He defeated Lucas Lepre at Euros.
Yes.
And that was also where I think... Oh, no, it wasn't Tommy on a tear at Euros. It was his
training partner.
Espen.
I was like, I was not going to come up with the name.
Yeah.
Glad you come up with the name.
Fucking Levi Jones. Holy shit.
Mm-hmm.
Upsetting Lucas Lepre at Euros. We have Tarek Hopstock. We have Youssef Kadour. We have Diego Pato. We have Darragh O'Connell.
He's Irish. It's an Irish name.
Yep. Pedro Rocha is the last of the eight.
So, again, go through all these guys. Again, Copa puts together a pretty stacked list of guys on their events. So, it's usually some real, real fun stuff to watch. Yep, yeah, streaming location, it's Fightera TV, February 16th. Starts at 3 p.m. local time. It's Rio de Janeiro. So, whatever... time zone that is. I think it's within a couple hours of us. So, you know, that's that.
Yeah, sweet.
So on to our preview of Fight to Win 102 in Rio Rancho, New Mexico. It is main evented by a black belt super heavyweight gi title match, Muhammad Ali versus Max Jimenez.
Yeah, Muhammad Ali is the fucking current IBJJF heavyweight world champ.
In the gi. And Max Jimenez is the number 4 ranked IBJJF heavyweight in the gi.
Enough said. That's going to be fucking fire, man.
It's going to be great, dude. We haven't seen Ali in a little bit, so I love watching Ali because he's got that super aggressive stand-up judo game, and Max Jimenez is a big, big dude. So, I heard this
gonna be fireworks.
Matchup a couple weeks ago, or when I was looking through, you know, upcoming matchups, I was like, oh shit, this is gonna be great. So the next matchup is 185-pound black belt gi match.
Jesse Jaquez versus Gustavo Araujo.
180-pound black belt judo match.
Garrett Aldrich versus Jesse Butler.
170-pound no-gi bout.
Aaron Pearls versus Nate Harris.
160-pound black belt gi match.
Joel Whitney versus Henry Martinez.
140-pound black belt no-gi bout.
Benjamin Sandoval versus Jacob Benitez.
200-pound brown belt no-gi.
James Gifford versus Troy Everett.
Yep. So,
Jesus, Troy's fucking super.
Dude, he was on Hawaii. He's on this next one. He's in New Mexico. He might also be in Albuquerque, but I always forget. Watch him for the walkouts and the other fun that he brings. Dude, the walkouts begin more and more exciting. There were a bunch of walkouts on Fight to Win 101. They were super exciting. So,
yeah.
So looking forward to this event.
Yeah.
Should be a lot of fun. Anything else, Mel?
That's it.
All right. Should be happening on
a lot of other matches.
Oh yeah, there's a ton. Yeah, we usually on the show just because the length of the show. We usually don't preview through the brown belts and the purple belts and the kids and teens. But it's usually a 35 fight card and happened on February 16th.
It's gonna be fucking awesome.
Mm-hmm. So Brothers Jiu-Jitsu, James Partridge is also having a 145-pound event. Can't find a lot of information on it, but it usually streams on James Partridge's Facebook page. So take a look at that.
Occurring on February 16th.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff on February 16th. So looking through the events we got, I think everything happens on the 16th. Cope Podia Season 6 on the 16th. Fight to Wins on the 16th. And Brothers 8-Man is on the 16th as well. Then the following week, we got Combat Jiu-Jitsu Fight Night. We have BJJ Stars, which is a new organization that has a stacked lineup. Grapple Fest 4, Finishers Invitational 8 is happening at the end of the month. We also have Atos versus GF Team. That's the Flow Grappling Super Series. And then that rounds out the month for the month of February. So some super exciting stuff happening this next week and the following weeks for the rest of the month. And I am super excited about it.
I'm fucking pumped.
What's your week look like, Camille?
Are
you back in
all
next
over.
Week?
I'm back and forth between New York City right now. And like, it's just, yeah, it's
craziness.
Fucking crazy. Yeah, I don't know. It's going to be crazy for a while. I'm looking forward to eventually getting back into a fucking schedule.
Awesome.
But yeah, it's been a fucking awesome week. I definitely Rewind recommends the entire fucking ADC West Coast Trials Finals.
We're trying to get a list. I'm going to try to edit an article on the website this week with Emil's help of all the lists of Rewind recommends that he has so far, so that you can go through and click on those. I also have a couple other articles we're working on right now. So the website is up. Finally, has the list of events, has links to the podcast, has links to other cool stuff, the articles we have written on Kasai 4, and then some other articles that we're looking at putting up there soon as well. So hopefully we become the one-stop shop for if you're looking to basically watch professional jiu-jitsu or broadcast-level events. That's our hope moving forward. So if you got anything you want to see on there, let us know. I think that's
If you have an event, let us know.
Oh, yeah. If you have an event, please let us know. This is all kind of in the outro of the show that we're going to put in there at the end. But
and give us a shout-out on social media, too.
That would be great as well.
Yeah.
All right. So, as always, I'm your host, Maine.
I'm your host, Emil.
We are the Grappling Rewind. We'll see you on the mats. If you like the show, please consider sharing it on Facebook with the folks at your gym. It's the best way that we grow the show, and we really appreciate it. You can reach out to us on email.
We also have Instagram. We have Facebook. We have Twitter. We have Google Plus.
Until that shuts down.
We have a website.
If you have an event you would like to have us cover, please let us know. If you have a name, like most people do, and you'd like to have us stop butchering it,
let us know.
Reach out to us. The show is also available on YouTube, Spotify, in addition to iTunes and every other podcast service. We very much appreciate your time, and thank you.